This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Jackie Lydon. Michelle Martin is away. Boardwalk Empire is the new hot cable series that became an instant critical darling and cult favorite when it premiered on HBO this fall. In the show, set in Prohibition-era Atlantic City, there's sex, corruption, and extreme violence.
Who shot you? What did he look like?
Good God, man!
It's Jimmy.
Fairhead.
Yes. We lost him, sir.
With Martin Scorsese, the Oscar-winning filmmaker behind gangster epics such as Goodfellas, Casino, and The Departed, blood and profanity is perhaps no surprise. But what may appeal to new fans is the cast of complicated, strong, and fascinating female characters. There's Margaret, the suffragette who finds herself attracted to the local political and crime boss. There's Jillian, the single mother and high-class showgirl. And then there's Angela, whose independent life changes when her common-law husband, Jimmy, returns from war and enters a life of crime. Our next guest can claim some credit for the vitality of these women on Boardwalk Empire. Margaret Nagel is a supervising producer and writer for the show, and she joins us now not from the seamy streets of Atlantic City, but from our studios at NPR West. Welcome, Margaret Nagel.
Hi.
Let's go into the writer's room here. I want to ask what drew you to this series in the first place. You're the senior woman on the writing production team, and what was that like when you talked about the women in this series? And maybe you could talk about a couple of them.
Well, sometimes it shocked the guys in the room, the things that I would say. You know, a writer's room is a sacred place in television. And we had a closed-door writer's room where we met 5 days a week for, you know, eight, never really more than 10 hours because we were so burnt out. But you use a lot of your own life and then you use that to inform the characters. So, like, for example, the character of Angela, Jimmy's wife, who is, quote, a bohemian.
Mm-hmm. Because they never actually marry. She's his common-law wife.
Yeah, she's common-law wife. And that was a character that is going to take a lot of twists and turns in the first season. And there was, and I can't tell you because I'm sworn. We cut our fingers with blood. Sworn to secrecy. But she takes some twists and turns, and the guys had an idea of what they wanted, and we looked at all these things that would build this story so that what was pulling her away from her marriage was really, truly an intense and powerful discovery about herself and her character that would ultimately change the course of her life. And with the guys, I was like, oh, no, 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 no. That's not what she's going to discover. And they were like, what? And I said, no, you guys are missing it. It's this she's going to discover. And then, of course, they were willing to go there. So she's going to go down a road that's very unexpected. But also, when you go back and you put together all the pieces of her character, it's going to make a lot of sense. And the guys were all like, all right, you made your money today. You can go home. Thank you.
Well, thanks for hooking me on season two. But let's get back to season one. I
yes.
really want to talk about character of Margaret Schroeder, who's played by the actress Kelly MacDonald. Now, this character is a young Irish widowed immigrant who's dealt with a lot of struggles. You have her reading Henry James. I loved that moment. She's a suffragette. She's active. She's an active gal. She's in the Women's Christian Temperance League. And she's fighting, as we said, for suffrage. That's at the heart of this next clip. I believe you wrote this, so let's listen.
I come from a country where women already have the right to vote. In fact, in most civilized countries, women are afforded that privilege.
Well, in this country, we're simply trying to protect women from the hard truths of life.
By denying them the right to take a meaningful part in it.
It's a shame you see it that way.
Oh, it isn't just me, sir. It's most women who'd like the right to vote. And as you've learned, if you withhold from a woman something she deeply desires, then she'll surely find a way to withhold something that you desire.
And what might that be?
Alcohol.
Now, I love this because she is standing up to a bunch of cigar-smoking politicians at a big political event. So what's the inspiration for her?
Well, Terrence Winter, the creator of the show, created Margaret Schroeder, but in that moment, I think that it was so astonishing that women in the United States did not have the right to vote at that time. And even though we were moving towards getting the amendment passed, it was no sure thing at that moment. It was still, Susan B. Anthony had started 70 years before trying to do this, and had died trying to do this and had not achieved it. So, and women all over the world were given this opportunity. And I often think that having been a woman, so often people don't expect you to say something smart. And I mean that all women have gone through that moment where you say something to a certain kind of man, and they just look at you and they go, "Wow, you really have a lot to say, don't mm-hmm. you?" And it was those moments that I certainly have experienced as a writer, as a woman in the entertainment industry, that it's always sort of it's never a victory. It kind of hurts to have someone, because you realize, oh God, we still have this is so entrenched. It's a long way to go here.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Jackie Leiden. We're talking about the critically acclaimed HBO series Boardwalk Empire with Margaret Nagel. She's a senior producer and writer for the program. Now, Margaret, I don't want you said you had very supportive male writers around you here. I don't want to imply that you're only writing female characters, because that scene that we hear at the top of our chat is a torturous interrogation scene undertaken by the FBI. Let's talk about that. What's going on here?
Well, Nelson Van Alden, played by the amazing Michael Shannon, has kidnapped this witness to the murder in the woods, and the witness, his belly is full of gunshot, and he's dying, and so he drags him into a dentist's office and shoots him up with cocaine to try and get one last shot at his identifying someone in the shooting scene. He really wants to get Jimmy ID'd. He senses that Jimmy's there at the scene.
Jimmy's another character.
Jimmy, played by Michael Pitt. And so he shoots him up with epinephrine, and the guy starts to speak to him in dirty Yiddish. And he says something very, very insulting in Yiddish, and Michael Shannon blows a gasket and sticks his fist in the wound and twists it and several times. And what was weird is I didn't think that was gross.
I didn't.
And then the men were just when it was shot and all, people were just grossed out by it and grossed out by the sound we added. And I was like, I don't know. Somehow that scene, the violence didn't freak me out at all. It freaks me out more to see a child in danger. It freaks me out more to see a woman hit across the face. Somehow this didn't bother me. I don't know why. But anyway, it was a really fun scene to write. And it's a funny scene, because then Michael Shannon starts praying. He dies and Michael Shannon starts praying over him. And his assistant is like, "Isn't he Jewish?" You know, and it's a very fun. There's a mom there who's translating the dirty Yiddish, and she's appalled. And it's a really fun, funny, sick, twisted scene that I loved writing.
Well, you really make the feds perhaps even more sadistic than any of the bootleggers. Although we haven't seen all of Al Capone's scenes yet, so I guess it could be an easy tie.
You know, when you're fighting criminals and you're learning about the criminal mind, it rubs off. It does.
Let's talk a little bit about some of your earlier work. You wrote the 2005 HBO drama Warm Springs, which won Best Film that year as an Emmy, and that depicted the life of Franklin Delano Roosevelt as he struggled with polio in the years before he won the presidency. Here's a short clip with Kenneth Branagh as Roosevelt and Kathy Bates as his therapist.
I wanted walk again.
And you still might. This report legitimizes all we've worked so hard for. We can raise funds now. It could change everything.
It won't change anything for me!
Franklin, I can't help you out of a hole if I climb in with you. Then we're both stuck.
So you were following amongst veterans for this movie. What did they respond to here?
Well, that your body isn't you. Your soul is you. And that when part of your body changes, you're still the same person inside. Once you get through the incredible loss and depression and fear and just the trauma, the sheer emotional and physical trauma of having some element of your body change that dramatically that that's an defining. What defines you is what's inside. FDR created the first polio rehabilitation center in the world in Warm Springs, Georgia. And people went down there and their bodies didn't necessarily heal, but their minds did. And they got to be around other people going through the same trauma, and they felt less alone. And that was huge because it allowed them to go back into the world and understand that people were always put off by the way they looked physically, saw them differently, and that you had to put them at ease. But then they got past it. They got to you. And so it's been really interesting. The movie has been in rehab centers, and it's sort of passed around. And it's sort of like I put a message in a bottle and threw it out there, and it got to where it needed to go.
Now, your next project is going to take a closer look at Eleanor Roosevelt's relationship with the journalist Lorena Hickok. Can you give us a little bit of the history between these two women and explain why it intrigued you?
Well, it's an extraordinary relationship. And just as Warm Springs was a defining experience in Franklin's life in the 1920s before he came president, I think Eleanor's relationship with Lorena Hickok made her the first lady that she was able to become. Because in those days, a first lady, she never went out of the White House. She poured tea for various women's groups that came through, but the first lady had no public voice. She had no position. It was a pretty brutal job, and first ladies didn't fare well at all. They fell apart one by one by one. So Eleanor was devastated to become first lady. She didn't want to be first lady. And the year Franklin was running for president, she met this incredible journalist from New York, Lorena Hickok. She was a political journalist. She was covering Franklin. And she had to do an interview with Eleanor. Her editor wanted her to do, find out about Eleanor Roosevelt, since she was the niece of a former president, Teddy Roosevelt. And they hit it off in a big way. It was a life-changing relationship. And I maintain they truly fell in love. And it was Lorena that convinced Eleanor that she could be a different kind of first lady, that she should create a life for herself. As long as she was going to be first lady, she needed to take those cameras out of the White House and make them follow her to places that no one wanted to go. And Eleanor was stunned by the poverty of African Americans, stunned that in the Depression, the first schools, public schools to close were those for African Americans. And that there was a whole generation of children that were simply not going to go to school. And Lorena gave Eleanor, through that friendship, love, this strength and clarity of vision to come into herself. It was a big life-changing relationship, and there's 16,000 pages of letters between them at the Roosevelt Presidential Library.
You had a chance to look at some of those 16,000 pages of their correspondence, and could you tell us a little bit about that, what you found?
Well, when their relationship was at its most heated, the first 2 years Eleanor was in the White House. In fact, at the inauguration, Eleanor was wearing Lorena's sapphire ring. She'd pinned her at that moment. And so the letters from the first weeks Eleanor is in the White House, and she's separated from Lorena because they spent all this time together in the year gearing up before she moved into the White House. And by the way, Eleanor and Franklin had separate residences before his last years as governor of New York. She was living in Greenwich Village with a lot of women. They were all gay, openly gay. She rented a room there. She was already moving in out into the fringes, trying to figure out her own life. So these letters that she wrote to Lorena in the first weeks out of the White House are just, I love you, I miss you. My love enfold thee. I kiss your picture before I sleep. I miss having my arms around you. I mean, they're really
steamy.
Steamy and heartbreaking.
Do you want to relate a story of what happened to you when you went to the New York Public Library to do some research on Lorena Hickok?
Yeah, this was, I was filling out a form for special collections, and I went up to this lovely elderly librarian, a man well into his 70s, and he read the slip of paper and he gasped and he kind of shook his head and he And I said, are you all right? And he said, well, I just, no one ever wants to look up these things about Lorena Hickok. What are you doing? And I said, well, I'm starting to write a movie about Eleanor and Lorena. And he just, his whole face changed and he leaned forward and he said, you know, Miss Hickok, no one ever collected her remains. And I went, what? He said, she went to Hyde Park to wait for Eleanor, and she lived there in a little apartment for the rest of her life. And when she died, no one collected her remains. And about 10 years after she died, a group of us in New York found out, and we went up and we paid to have her buried and gave her a proper funeral. And it's just, it's sad. It's a rough life. I think, and she was so brilliant, Lorena Hickok, and so out of the box and dangerous. She was dangerous, ultimately, in terms, because she was emotionally forthright and very passionate. And everything about Lorena Hickok that Eleanor was so attracted to was every reason why she couldn't be in an open relationship with her or have her around as much as she wanted, because it was too hard on both of them. Right. So it was a tragic love story, ultimately.
I look forward to seeing that. Margaret, let me return to Boardwalk Empire. I understand you're not planning to return for the second season. Can you tell us why?
Oh, well, actually, I was contract. There was an L.A. writer's room, and now there's a New York. The writer's room is in New York, and I live in L.A., and I have a husband and family here. So, and I went on Boardwalk Empire. I had another job at the same time. And so the other job, I had to leave, actually, to go produce my pilot for CBS. So, c'est la vie.
So it goes. But are you concerned that some of your strong women will be less strong or less front and center or lose some of their vitality after you leave?
Well, no, the guys are great. They're great in that room. And they have a wonderful writer, female writer in New York now. And Jillian, Angela, Margaret, those characters are up and running. And the guys, they write them great. They're doing an amazing job. And we're very lucky with the show. It was done right.
Margaret Nagel is an award-winning television writer. She's just finished working on the HBO series Boardwalk Empire, and she joined us from the studios of NPR West. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you so much.
And that's our program for today. I'm Jackie Leiden, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.